This is North Shore Today for Thursday. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell, along with Rick Moore. And in today's program, I guess, Rick, we're just bracing for this ice-cold weekend coming up here in the next few days, starting probably in the next few hours here. So it's going to get colder and colder.
Yeah, we were just planning how we're going to walk the dog this weekend. And I probably won't be going skiing, but I'll have my ski gear on, I think, when we walk the dog. And she's just a little lap dog, so we're going to have to cover her up, too. Yeah, it looks the cold doesn't bother me. It's that wind. I think that's the real pain. And we're talking 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds with single-digit temperatures.
Yeah, it's going to be the wind chill. And I know the town of Hamilton tweeted out something yesterday or the day before about, you know, this is the time to watch your pipes, and especially when you get that really ice-cold wind and the very cold weather. So the wind and the cold together really just goes right through certain houses a lot faster than others. So be very careful about that. And it's my advice is don't cheat on the heat this weekend. I'm all for cheating on the heat as much as anybody. But this weekend, don't do it because of the pipes. It's not going to be worth it in case something happens.
That's a good point, Bill, because we've been able to save pretty much all winter with the high temperatures. And, you know, I'm sure most people's oil bills or heating bills, whatever kind of heat you have, are down, not only because of the warm temperatures, but also because of the energy rates. So you're right. That's really good advice. Go ahead and kick the thermostat up a little bit this weekend. That's a really good idea.
No, you really should on these weekends. It goes kind of contrary to what you think, but your house, and I've had this happen. I actually had an incident like a few years ago. It was very cold out, and my current house is very well insulated for a house, I guess. I mean, maybe there's some mistakes here or there in it, but my radiators froze because I had a couple of rooms that I didn't think I really needed to heat, but that because I didn't have any piping in there other than the radiators. But actually, the water in the radiators, I think, froze. It was so cold outside a few years ago, so you do have to watch out for that. And so I kind of, you know, you live and learn. You're never too old to learn. And,
boy, you got that right.
And I do remember living years ago. I was renting a room, and many years ago in this old house, and we had one of these days. It was like it was a Christmas morning, probably in the late 70s, early 80s, or late 70s, I guess, 80 maybe. And there was just like fierce winds, 0 degrees, and the pipes froze. And thank goodness nothing happened. But you know, you never can tell. And like I said, if it's cold inside, that means in your house, because you're trying to save energy, that means the cold air, and this is so obvious, I guess, for people, is that then the pipes are more likely to freeze. So if you balance it out, warm up, keep the house warmer on the inside on the next few days, then your pipes may be less likely to freeze. So just be careful. So
yeah, I also had a house where the pipes froze, the water pipe coming into the house froze from outside, and it burst, and it was a tremendous mess. And then I found out from a contractor that they have there's a electrical heating tape that you can actually wrap around the pipes. It's been a long time since we've had weather like that, but I did have that heating tape for quite a while. And I also learned something yesterday, Bill. I have a snowblower where the auger, one half the auger broke. That's the blade that circulates and kicks out the snow. One half of it seemed to have broken, and it snapped off the shear pin. Well, lo and behold, it's supposed to do that so that you don't break the gearbox, and it's a very easy fix, which I didn't know. I almost spent a lot of money to get that fixed, but I have a son-in-law who's an engineer who happens to know how to fix snow blowers, and he didn't fix it for me, but he showed me how to do it. So I ordered the part, and I'm looking forward to fixing the snow blower myself. Just saying that, you know, if you check this stuff out on YouTube or Google or whatever, and you might be able to save a dime or two.
Maybe we should change the nature of this show and maybe just be giving out tips all the time. I mean, this is such useful information we're sharing here with the folks this morning.
Instead of click and clack, we could be frickin' frack.
Yeah, so, well, anyway, in today's post, I just want to tell the folks what's on the post here. I was with our entertainment editor Bob Gunther yesterday, and so
I didn't know he had that role. All right.
Yeah. So I'm with him yesterday, and I was we were talking, and I was sharing with him how, because I think he and I might have a common interest here and there in a few things, being of the same generation. So, do you remember Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks? Do you remember that at all?
No.
Anyways, he was. I don't know what he, I guess, I don't think he played the guitar, but he also played the violin, but it was kind of a country swing kind of music. Very famous guy back in the day and still was very active, but he just passed away in the past few days. So he was 74 years old, but if you know him, you know him, and if you don't, then you don't, because he was somewhat obscure. But we have a couple of videos up of Dan Hicks and the and his Hot Licks, a couple of their songs. They did all kinds of different songs, but and if you want, if you know it, then but he did pass away, and it wasn't really publicized all that much, maybe because he's not that famous. But anyways, I did see it in one of the papers, and so we do have a video on that. And we also have also joining us today, Brendan Crichton, who we talked to. He's the state rep from Lynn and Nahant. And we'll run that interview today in the program as well. We do have a separate post on that, involved with a lot of economic development issues. And Congressman Moulton is going to be on the North Shore on Saturday, and he's got a couple of sort of town hall or meet the congressman stops. So we've got those listed in the post below. So if you're around, one's in Ipswich, one's in North Andover, and I'm thinking the other one's in North Newburyport, but I don't have it right in front of me. But you do, if you can just scroll down the page and take a look. The dates and times are right there, and they're all on Saturday, prior to the big Valentine's Day.
Well, I'm pleased to know that Bob Gunther has been elevated to that position, and I look forward to the new and exciting stuff that he's going to bring. And you know, while you were talking about that topic, Beyonce came to mind, and I watched, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds of the Super Bowl halftime show. I am just not interested in those halftime shows, but I did watch Beyonce come out on the stage, and the reference to Beyonce, I watched The Big Bang Theory, and Raj Kuthrapali once talked about her and saying that, they asked him, you know, why do you like Beyonce, and he answered, because she's curvy and she owns it. And I watched Beyonce come out, and the singers today, boy, am I going astray here, but the singers today don't really sing. They sort of lip sync and they dance. Everybody has a dance routine. Everybody has a dance routine. So, you know, I'm not interested in watching Bruno Mars dance, and I'm not interested in watching whatever that other band was dance. But Beyonce, yeah, I'm interested in watching her dance. But the controversy that has developed since then by the far right is rather amazing. I mean, it did look like a tribute to the Black Panthers. The ladies were dressed in what would seem to be Black Panther costumes for women, and they did the big X on the middle of the field for Malcolm X. And when I saw that, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. It didn't get me all messed up about it. I thought it was an interesting show, but I get really interested in how the discussion goes with some of the things that happen on a daily basis that sort of go over my head, but the right wing and the left wing get all hot and bothered about it.
Yeah. You know, I was watching the Super Bowl halftime, and I was, here's one of the things is when I'm watching TV now, it seems like, unless it's like a program, if it's a game, I tend to think, well, I can distract myself and do something else while I'm also watching the game, which would also hold true for the halftime ceremony. So I didn't pick up on any of that. I'm watching the dancing, if anything.
If
I look up, I'm just watching the dancing, like you said. I am watching Bruno Mars dance. I am watching Beyonce dance. I'm really not paying. My eyes will distract and go away, and I'm not looking at anything else. I'm not looking at that. Maybe I left the room. Maybe whatever happened. You know, I didn't pick up on that till the next day. You know, but
I didn't pick up on it till I mentioned it in the news.
Right, me too. Yeah,
I was you know, and visually, I thought, you know, Beyonce put on a great show. So I mean, you know, what's if she gives tribute to the Black Panthers and Malcolm X? I mean, she's an entertainer, and she has a statement to make. What's wrong with that? You know, we do the far right, I'm equally displeased with the far left, but the far right is always screaming, you know, First Amendment. Well, there you go.
No, I didn't really hear any. I didn't hear criticism. I heard some criticism of it, but the criticism I heard of it was, why is this at a halftime of the NFL Super Bowl game? That's the criticism I heard, And I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the place for it or not, to be honest with you. But on the other hand,
yeah,
it is what it is. Who knows? Whatever.
Yeah, and entertainers have a platform, and they want to use it. I hear that all the time. Well, why is so-and-so being, you know, touting this presidential candidate or that presidential candidate? And usually it's the left, you know, the liberals who tout their candidates. But then people get all upset when Clint Eastwood, you know, touts a conservative candidate. And to me, it's like, hey, you got the platform, you got the money, go ahead and speak your piece. I don't have any problem with that.
All right. Looking around, Rick, on the North Shore, again, it's not the busiest of news days. I'm looking at some of the headlines in the newspapers. Nothing really huge. One thing that did come to mind, I saw a nice little story in the item today. They feature, just for the heck of it, I was not living in the area at the time. In fact, I was very, very young at the time. This marks the 60th anniversary of what was a major train crash in Swampscott. Apparently, so it's in which 13 people died in that train crash happening in the morning at about 8:18 a.m. So it happened on February 28th. So this is the month of that anniversary. So later on this month. But it was a train from Boston to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, I guess. So the lines have changed a little bit since then. But, all the years, I probably heard about that, but, I did not remember of hearing about that train crash. Usually sometimes you hear about the great floods, even if you're not from the area originally, you hear about these things and you know about them. But anyways, a little anniversary, 1956, the train crash in Swampscott.
Well, there are two major milestones in my career at WESX. One, I think, was the very first year, perhaps the second year I was working. It was the first year I was doing news, I think. There was a commuter crash in Beverly Farms. Two trains collided head-on, and two North Shore residents were killed, one from Gloucester, and I know the family. And that was obviously a major tragic event that was right in our backyard. And I remember one of our administrators, one of our managers, came in the next day and was a little distraught that we had spent so much time on it the night before on our news coverage. And there was you, me, Al Needham, and Bob Royce, I think, were there. And we sort of did away with local, the regular program, and we stuck with that train crash. And I know Al went there, and he was reporting live by phone. Of course, we didn't have the technology we have now, but it was major coverage, and we interviewed people, and it was. We actually had the story at 4:30. We were the first on UPI and AP worldwide. They gave us the top billing at 4:30. The train crash happened at 4:28, and we were in the 4:30 worldwide news. But the manager came in and said, well, what's the big deal? Only two people were killed. And that just drove me crazy. And then the other big event, Bill, I know that you remember, is the conflagration in Lynn. I think that was in the early 80s. And, boy, that was a major disaster. And it's a miracle that, I don't believe anybody got hurt from that.
No, I think you're right. No, there's... I remember both those, obviously. And I do remember the train crash and the fire in Lynn. I think it was a... Friday night, Saturday morning kind of a deal, Friday night, Saturday morning thing. But it went on for quite a while. So, I was living in Lynn at the time. I think I was going to WESX that morning. And, of course, back then, I mean, there was just not the news that there is today. But I remember leaving my apartment in Lynn where we were living. And so that had to be maybe 81, I'm thinking, something like that. Mm-hmm. And seeing a fire station wagon from Lexington drive by, and I'm thinking, that's strange, And sure enough, it was because there's a huge fire in downtown Lynn. But, so.
That was horrible. But, again, fortunately, nobody heard. Bill, the only news I have from up here, deep in, is the fact that My Place Restaurant has won its year-round liquor license. And that is good news for those of us who like to dine. The owners of My Place by the Sea Restaurant now have a new year-round alcohol license, opening up another place for visitors and locals to go on winter weekends for drink and a meal. So that is exciting news. And if you haven't been to My Place, it's a beautiful location. Great restaurant, nice people up there. And the other good thing about Ms. Milbury and her staff and her co-owners is they hire a lot of local high school kids and really treat them very well. So I suggest you go ahead and frequent My Place if you've not been there up in Rockport. It's at the end of Bearskin Neck.
Yeah, just ahead we're going to get to Brendan Crichton here. But, in the Wall Street Journal today, Rick, this is a breaking story that I think people are going to be talking about big time for the next few days here, especially with this cold weather we're having. Here's the story, Rick, and basically I'm going to summarize it very quickly. There's a story... devoting a half a page to this about professional golfers wanting to wear shorts on the tour. You know how they always wear long pants? Well, Rory McIlroy they got a photo of him here wearing shorts. And when you think about it, I mean, the women in the LPGA wear shorts, right? But the men all wear pants. I didn't really you know, who thinks about this stuff? But you're right. The men never wear shorts. And so since the early days of professional golf, they've always worn shorts. But be on the lookout. Things could be changing. Keep your eye on that. In the PGA events coming up, the men could be wearing shorts.
I'm going to tell you something. When the Encyclopedia Galactica visits Earth to see if they want to invite us into the galactic community, they're going to conclude that there is no intelligent life on this planet.
And why is that, Rick?
That the fact that we spend so much time on things like that. Do you wear shorts or do you wear long pants on the golf course?
All right. I thought it was important. No, I'm just kidding. All right.
So you must have got all upset.
No, no. I'm not a golfer. I just, you know, I'm into fashion, right? You know that, right?
Well, so. We're both into that. But, you know, I know I'm not a golfer either, but I have a lot of friends, and geez, they wear shorts all the time when they go golfing.
No, I know that. You know, it's just, you know, it's, I guess what I would say to them is, like, if they really were respecting the game, they'd wear pants, right? Right? You know?
You know what? I'd have to go over and talk to some people over in Scotland. That's what I'd be, because they're the guys who know. I don't know.
Well, a kilt would be different. If you're playing, I mean, that's kind of dressing it up a little bit, kicking it up to, you know, more of a celebration or something like that, or a ceremony. But whatever. All right, so way too much time on that. Brendan Crichton is here with us, and hang in there with us. We'll check some sports stories, and we'll get an update on the shorts just as well here. Just a moment. We got a bunch of sports stories to talk about, so don't go away here on North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com. We're joined by Brendan Crichton, who is state representative, 11th District, Essex District, and serves Lynn and Nahant. And Brendan, great to have you with us, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill. It's great to have you here, and Lynn, and excited to talk about the issues in the district and at the State House.
Well, let's begin with a couple of things. Let's just start big and or broader with and not so much in Lynn and Nahant, but statewide with economic development and the governor's economic development bill, the governor right next door to us here in Swampscott. But tell us about that bill and where it's at right now with the legislature.
So right now the legislature, including the Economic Development Committee, which I'm proud to serve on, we'll be reviewing all the details. As with any economic development proposal of this size, it's, you know, the devils are in the details, and it's going to take a little while. We'll have public hearings. We'll get to know the bill better. It came out right around the same time as the governor's budget came out, so a lot to digest at this point. But I was pleased to see some money in there for workforce training, as well as for our technical and vocational schools, which, as you know, Lynn Tech and Lynn is one of our, you know, prides and joy, and would love to see some more money invested there to help kids get the skills they need to fill some of these jobs job vacancies. And additionally, the governor used a portion of my bill, which deals with housing incentive for market rate housing, in particular in a city like Lynn, where we're trying to revive our downtown and our waterfront, and sometimes developers can't make the finances work. So this bill would actually mandate that they have market rate housing in return for credits, which would help us sustain our local economy. Again, this is really the start of the process, so both the House and Senate will have their stab at it, but looking forward to learning more about it.
All right, you got to tell me more about market rate housing just for our listeners out there. Okay, So tell me, maybe just as a follow-up, how does that then work?
So essentially right now in the state, we have a number of incentives for affordable housing, which I'm completely supportive of. Chapter 40B is one of the most important pieces of law that we have on the books, and Lynn certainly is meeting their obligation there and then some. But in order for downtowns to really survive and thrive, you really need to have a balance of income levels within your community. And one of our challenges has been, when we meet with developers, is when they're redoing a building, you know, of large size, they have a hard time making the numbers work. So without incentives from the government, which they have right now for affordable, they're unable to make it work. So this essentially would allow for, I forget the exact amount of money, but it would create a tax credit for developers and also a local option where the city could say, we're going to do some tax incremental financing with you to help you make the numbers meet. It hasn't worked yet. We've had the Lynn City Council passed it a few years ago. It's a bill that was geared towards the gateway cities. But right now we have a few projects in the downtown and waterfront that are considering it. My piece of legislation would allow for new construction. Currently, the incentive is only provided if you're rehabbing a building. So for the old mill buildings, that was kind of the intent.
Yeah.
But with our waterfront, you know, number of parcels vacant, we see that as potential for new construction, which would be huge to have that market rate plugged in. Sorry, that's kind of a very long scrambled explanation, but it'd be good to diversify our housing stock, essentially. Yeah.
No, and I understand that, and I understand also that with the, you know, kind of shifting a little bit toward Lynn now, that there is a lot of new housing planned for Lynn apartments, as I understand it.
Yep, absolutely. So we kind of have three focal areas or focus areas in the city for economic development, and that would be the downtown, the waterfront, and the Boston Street corridor, which was recently rezoned this past year. It had always been industrial. Essentially, so that 1A corridor that goes down Western Ave to Boston Street and then to Flax Pond, which had always been industrial base. We've changed that now to allow for mixed-use residential. So we're hoping to see some – there are currently some buildings going up, shovels in the grounds, but we're hoping to see more there to increase our housing stock. And then on the waterfront side, you know, 300-plus acres of undeveloped land or underdeveloped land in which we have the zoning – expedited permitting. We have this housing incentive. We have, I think we've really set the table for increased housing. And additionally, on the other, the non-waterfront side, I guess the old GE Gear plant has been purchased. I can't say the acreage, but it's a huge plot of land that the developer wants to do housing in as well. And it abuts the commuter rail. Actually has a commuter rail stop there right now. It's private. We're working on, you know, making some adjustments there, but and then lastly, the downtown, which we don't have as much vacant space down here, but we certainly have a lot of underutilized buildings. In particular, we're looking at a development of roughly 50 units at the old Flatiron Building Security Bank in Central Square. So that would be residential on top, commercial first floor. And then also there's another building that's going to be built up over by the commuter rail stop up Silsby Street. So a lot of great things happening, but I don't want to, you know, brag until the shovels are in the ground. But I think things are headed in the right direction.
All right. So I'm not sure whether we've covered everything, Brendan. We kind of discussed a little bit some of the topics. But is there other development or other pieces of development or other phases of? I know the governor was in town with the development director like a month or so ago, and now several months ago, I guess now. But could because of this project that they're involving Lynn with as far as state involvement?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a really good team together. We're calling it the LEAD team. It's the Lynn Economic and Advancement Development team, and it consists of Secretary Ash, his team, the Lynn delegation, Senator McGee, myself, Representative Ehrlich, Fennell, who is now leaving, but Rep. Wong, Congressman Moulton, the whole entire city of Lynn, the mayor, EDIC, all the community development folks, the housing authority, basically anybody that you could think of that would have an interest in Lynn's economic future is at the table. And I think over the past 10 years, we've really set that table with a lot of local legislation and state programs, the removal of power lines, the ferry, the master plan in itself for the waterfront. So at this point, we're coming together and saying, all right, now that we have all our ducks in a row, how do we actually, you know, make it happen? Yeah. So I think we've been coordinated at a very high level. We meet regularly, talk on the phone daily, and some good things are coming together. I think one of my biggest concerns is still with the Lynn Ferry. So we had a two-year pilot program championed by Senator McGee over the course. I worked for the senator for 10 years prior, and really from day one, this was his focus to bring water transportation to the city of Lynn. And he succeeded in it. Unfortunately, our two-year pilot program was up last year. So while we've seen huge increases in ridership and a lot of actually folks from Nahant, Swampscape, Arrowhead, really a regional showing of support for continuing operations and expanding operations, we've been yet to come to an agreement with the administration. So we're still working with them. They haven't said no. And I think they'll hopefully see the benefits not only for transportation for the North Shore, but one of the parcels that we're looking to develop, the reason they came in the first place was the ferry was, you know, 100 yards away. Yeah. And that's 300 plus units of market rate housing on the waterfront. So certainly don't want to see our progress halted without the ferry coming this year.
Yeah, but that's what I could do, you know, Brendan. I can get a ferry, and I'm in business here, right? There you go.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, the passionate riders we've seen on the ferry, like no other service we've seen so far. But it's great in the sense, transportation in general, right? So every transportation service is subsidized, whether you're driving a car or riding the T or taking a bus. With the ferry, we don't have... You don't have potholes. You don't have some of the infrastructure challenges that you would. And if we had a winter like we did last year, the ferry would have been up and running. It can run 50 weeks in the year and really, takes more cars off the roads, less congestion.
Yeah.
And again, the economic development piece can't be overstated.
Yeah. Maybe we can shift to a couple of other things. Tell me about the you're also on the Public Health Committee, and not that it. Well, I guess the opioid bill, I don't know if it passed through there at all, but it passed the House, but now it's in conference. So is there an update on that bill at all at the State House?
It seems from Speaker DeLeo said that the conference committee is making some progress, which is great. I think both the House and Senate bill have some really strong points to it. So I think, regardless of which provisions are left in and which are taken out, this is going to be a big step forward. But there's no silver bullet in this crisis. I don't know that all the pieces are there. I think we've recognized as a Commonwealth that this isn't something we should look at as a criminal act. This is something that we should look at it as a disease. And I think this bill approaches it as such. Some of the provisions, including limiting first-time opiate prescriptions to 1 week. We didn't go with the governor's 72-hour holding, but we did have, for patients that are submitted for overdoses, but we did have a 24-hour mandatory evaluation by a medical professional. I think some increased funding, some more access to beds. So when people, are dealing with a family member in this crisis, that they know where they can access help when they need it. So in the education piece too, certainly education prevention, and make sure that students know the dangers of trying. This isn't a harmless, act of taking a pill out of your parents' cabinets. This is something that can lead to devastating results.
Gotcha. The another piece maybe is probably out of your committee or out of some of your work, certainly as the Lynn State rep, is the Union Hospital. Is there an update on that situation?
Yep, absolutely. So it's been a number of years since partners announced that they were going to be shifting services to Salem. And, it's a long story, but the end result right now is that we pleaded our case as a city, as elected officials, as a community to the Department of Public Health, during their essential services committee hearings. And I think because of the passionate testimony by so many in the community and the need for having a hospital, one hospital at least, in a city of 90,000, 90 plus thousand, in a region too. I've heard from a lot of folks from Nahant as well. It's so essential for our general health and well-being. So the Department of Public Health determined that, in fact, the plan as submitted by partners in North Shore Medical Center did not meet those essential services standards. So they just recently submitted, partners in North Shore Medical submitted their response to that ruling. Yeah. We're actually going to be meeting with some folks at the state today and tomorrow to talk more about it. So it's an ongoing process, but the city had a big win by demonstrating the need to have a hospital in our area.
Ultimately, though, can they really control what partners will do here, or will it get sold off, or how does that kind of work?
It's very tricky. I mean, to North Shore's Medical Center's credit, they had committed to keeping emergency services open for 3 years. We believe it should be open in perpetuity and make sure that those, accompanying services are there. It's always difficult. This isn't something unique to Lynn. If you open up the paper any time over the past for years, you've seen hospitals closing throughout the state. It's a private entity. Legally, there's not a ton we can do, but I think we've made a compelling case and have kept the pressure on to keep services to, allow for basic, essential, rather, treatment in the city of Lynn.
Yeah. Wasn't that many years ago. There were actually two hospitals in the city of Lynn, right?
Yep.
But whatever. Brendan, anything else you want to share with us at all? Very busy, Nahant, Lynn, and so on, and different things that you're doing?
Yeah, just generally, it's been a really great first year. It's been awesome working with the new economic development team in the city of Lynn. I think my constituents, both from Lynn and Nahant, have kept in regular contact, which is always needed just to hear what's going on in the district and what's important to people. If if I'm not hearing from residents, then, you know, I don't know, you know, how they feel about certain pieces of legislation. And there's a lot, I mean, thousands of bills filed every session. So it's important that people, you know, keep an eye on what's going on at the State House, and important that, you know, I communicate back to them to make sure that their needs and interests are being taken care of.
Brendan, I understand there's one new addition to the Crichton family. Can you give us an update here?
Yep, absolutely. My son, Nathaniel Allen Crichton, turned 5.5 months recently. He's in great health. My wife is doing great. I have to give all the credit to her. But he's a ball of laughs. I should have had him included for this interview because he's a lot of fun. He rolled over the other day. I guess that's a big step, and now it's, you know, got us nervous at night when he's rolling over, but he's a lot of fun and certainly the highlight of my year and the most important thing in my life at this point.
All right, Brendan, great talking with you. Best of luck down the line here, and we'll, I'm sure, be in touch soon again. Thanks for so much.
Great. Thanks so much, but really appreciate it.
Yep. Brendan Crichton, the state rep, 11th Essex District, serving Lynn and Nahant, with us here on MSONewsSports.com.
All right, we're back, and got to mention last night's hockey game, Wednesday night's hockey game at the Talbot at Gloucester and Gloucester. What a game. Peabody Tanners, Gloucester Fishermen. Oh, my goodness, what a game. Peabody leading 2-0 early on. Gloucester tying it up. 1 second to go in the first period. They score to tie the game. Fishermen get the next 2 goals in the second period, lead 4-2. Peabody comes back with 6 minutes gone in the third to make it 4-3. And then in the last 30 seconds, Peabody ties the game up, and the Gloucester Fishermen were absolutely distraught about that tie. But I'm going to tell you, from a fan's perspective, what a tremendous game. And standouts immediately coming to mind, Owen Brewster for Peabody, Donnie Shaw for Peabody, the defense for Peabody. Gloucester had some tremendous goaltending with Noah Poliski. Alex Enos, a great game. And the play of Liam Lyons was amazing. Liam Lyons is a little guy, and he was crushed frequently by these Peabody Tanners, big, tremendous forwards and defensemen. And Lyons still was able to pop up like, you know, remember the Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. He was able to pop back up, and he actually got those 2 goals in the second period that gave Gloucester the lead. So just an outstanding game between two talented teams, really up and down hockey, what you like to see, and Rock'em Sock'em Crash, and two great coaches, Sean Lyons for Gloucester, Mark Leonard for Peabody. And I also, of course, we have that on demand. Also talked to Coach Leonard. I didn't realize he runs, he works hockey all year round full time, and he has a hockey business, and he does clinics. And we're going to talk to Coach Leonard, obviously, and Coach Lyons during the playoffs, but then we're going to talk to Coach Leonard. Going to try to get him in studio for an hour's discussion about all the things involving hockey that he does with the youth around the North Shore. I think that will make a really interesting program. So looking forward to it, but listen on demand. Great, great game last night between two schools going on into the playoffs in Division II.
Sounds good. And one note from boys basketball from last night. Danvers defeated Lynn Classical 68-63. Now, Danvers is up in that north or large division this year. I think that puts them up in a pretty good situation. Possibly, I'm not sure what the standings are right now, but they're in the driver's seat in that division. Maybe that clinched it for them. That was a big game for them as the regular season is winding down here. And of course, we'll be beginning our playoff coverage here soon, but there's a lot of different games and tournaments coming up in the next week or so, with vacation week next week and so on. So the regular season closing out, some of the titles, league titles, have been decided, but that was an important game. Danvers going on the road last night, winning at Lynn Classical, because they've because Salem, by the way, Salem boys basketball lost at Lowell. That was their first loss last night. But that was an out-of-league game and a tough division, I guess another Division I team. But Salem's actually in the smaller division in the Northeastern Conference this year. So in the past, it's been a real battle with Salem, Classical English for that boys' North title. But this year, Danvers and Salem flip-flop. So Danvers is up in the large, and Danvers won the state title last year, lost a lot of players, but they've still kind of put together a very good season this year, and it might be the championship season. I'm just not 100% sure whether they won the title, because there's just no great place to go to grab standings. So whatever.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out too to Swampscott coach Dave Bourne. He and coach Bill Cahill from Gloucester both called in with reports from their game against each other last night. Great game, from what I understand. Gloucester winning it by 5, and they both have reports up on the website. And for Coach Bourne, it's been, you know, a difficult season, of course, for his kids as they are scrambling to try to get some wins in the win column. But he calls in after every game, and he always gives, kudos to his team, but also to the other team as well. So I appreciate Coach Bourne. It ain't easy to call in, you know, when you're having a tough season. Coach Cahill also called in last night. So we've got the reports from two different perspectives, and I appreciate that. But that's up there on the website in their own voices.
Yeah, and we also, just to make a note, we do have word that the Monahan student athletes are going to be announced, I believe, by tomorrow, and they'll be up on our website as well. Hopefully we'll have interviews with them, and look for that in the next 24 hours as well here on our website. Those would be the January male and female Moynihan Lumber student athletes of the month from the Moynihan Scholar Student Athlete Program.
That's it, Bill. Just a random thought. Boy, I hope the Bruins can bring it back together. What a mess the other night.
All right, that's it. With Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Thanks for being with us. Special thanks to Brendan Creighton, our guest tonight, the state rep from Lynn and Nahant, here with us on North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com.